This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Money Moves on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
What's up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Stormy Bonatoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you back here. Money Moves for the next 2 hours live in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Huge day. The NFL officially back as of tonight. Also, we were supposed to have some Major League Baseball in action right now between the Tigers and Twins. That's delayed due to rain. We'll keep you up to date on whether or not it does get restarted here. A handful of Major League Baseball games throughout the early afternoon. But I actually want to start here briefly with tennis. And I know we are not a big tennis show. We leave that to Gil Alexander. We leave that to Zach Cohen here on the network largely. But I was stunned and impressed and had so much fun watching all of the highlights of this Blake Shelton match. I feel terrible for any East Coasters that were trying to watch and had to wait or went to sleep and missed the end of a match that ended up at 3:33 in the morning Eastern time.
Well, I mean, I would say that you're trying to be cool when really you're not, because it all started with the Tiafoe match. Thank you very much.
Oh, for sure. I mean, that too.
Banger.
And the fact that they're going to play each other now.
Absolutely fantastic. I watched every second of Foe getting it done. Is that me? Anyway, very much. I thought my speaker was playing. But no, you're right. I mean, I texted Zach in our Harvard Handicappers group chat, and I was like, hey, look, like, I know I'm not a tennis guy, because I actually did not watch the late match. I just watched the entirety of the Tiafoe one, and that was great. Watching him come back down two sets and then storming back to eventually win that thing. I understand that one was going crazy. What was the message afterward? Please let my family have the day off of work, because they got done at 3:30. Yeah. Why do they schedule it like that way? They know how long tennis matches can go, and it's on the East Coast, right? So, like, what are we doing?
So, I don't fully understand. That was actually something I was curious your opinion on, and I'm not going to pretend to understand the intricacies of how the U.S. Open schedules their matches and how that pairs with the broadcast windows, all of that stuff. But that in particular, like, that needs to be in primetime.
Yeah.
It makes no sense why a match would go that late into the night, especially when that's where you're playing.
Sure. That was the one thing that was confusing me. Hopefully they kept serving what are the drinks with the melon balls on the top?
I don't know what they're called.
But those look great, by the way.
Yeah, they look delightful.
Hopefully they kept serving them all night. I also, because I was watching so much tennis yesterday, because I was just curious and I had never looked it up, do you know why they score at 15:30-40? Because apparently it goes all the way back to, like, medieval France when they first started playing this. And I guess it's tied to potentially a clock, like a clock face, you know, 15 minutes, 30 minutes, and then 45, 60. So whatever it is. Either way, I thought that was pretty interesting, because, like, there's no natural way to score this. But it was good tennis.
Yep.
It was fun. And I'm very interested to see what the result's going to be, because your first thought, at least mine, was like, all right, maybe we fade Tiafoe, because that was a really long match and you had to come back and it took 4 hours. Nope. Seems pretty even.
Hold your beer.
Yep.
Ben Shelton, so the two of them facing off, he is a -272 favorite in that semifinal match against Tiafoe. Tiafoe's in +216. That'll be Friday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, so a much more reasonable hour for the men's semifinal, which now guarantees an American will have a spot in the final of the U.S. Open, which is really cool. Down goes Carlos Alcaraz, the 7-time major champ and defending U.S. Open champion. Okay, now back to what we're good at. Let's set the table for everything we have to come here today on Money Moves.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is The Rundown.
Are you in or are you out? We are looking at some of those make-miss updated CFP odds already, even though we're only entering week 2. JVT, this is something we're going to plan on doing weekly, checking in on these numbers moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, and this is also something pretty interesting too, because I think there is an argument to be made that if you are willing to lay prices, because again, there is value in laying big prices. The extreme example, though, is always Floyd Mayweather versus Conor McGregor. -550 was one of the greatest bets you'll ever make in your life. So to that point, I think there is some value per se if you wanted to swallow it in some of these prices to make the college football playoff. We'll see exactly who that is. There's other markets too, like number one seed and whatnot, that is worth discussing.
Two teams that are both odds on, Texas and Ohio State. Everybody this week talking about that matchup, talking about the SEC, the Big Ten. And we can admit there's a little East Coast snobbery when it comes to football. Not on this program. West Coast bias on deck in hour two today, which includes, JVT, a massive game between Boise State and Memphis. Speaking of Boise, how does Oregon respond following a near upset in week one? And did you know we have a road FCS team favored against a team from the Mountain West this week? Let's get it.
Yeah, that one's got a lot of fun. We do have to settle the debate. Does Boise State count? They're technically in the Mountain time zone. That is something we have to figure out.
We can call it Mountain West Coast bias.
There we go. Okay. I mean, they used to be part of the Mountain West. So that was part of the logic when we used to use them. But either way, people need to focus on that matchup. And you said it. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not kidding. Montana State in Nevada is a fascinating game that I cannot wait to handicap and watch on Saturday night.
Yes, that we have seen a little bit of line movement in favor of the home dog Nevada Wolfpack here from 5.5 to 4.5. But being a dog at home to an FCS opponent just visually seems a little bit off. Of course, Montana State become a bit of a power program in the FCS after winning the national title last year.
Remember, I believe, I'll have to go back and look at the line history, but I believe when my guy, Devin Dampier, broke onto the scene, his first game was Montana State. I believe they were underdogs in that game against Montana State. I'll have to go back and look at the line history, but it was a very tight line regardless. And I can't wait to go back and look and see if that was it.
You wanted to say irregardless so bad just now. Shout out Chris Massaro, by the way.
He's wrong.
For chiming in on the DM saying, yes, get him, tell him. No, not wrong. You even Googled it in front of the people.
Okay.
But we will kick off with kickoff at last today. Or as Jaden Remade on X posted, we are Justin Herbert playoff wins away from the NFL returning. Ouch. T-minus 5.5 hours before the Super Bowl rematch out there in the Pacific Northwest. Patriots, Seahawks. We're going to hit this game several times throughout the course of the show today. Thoughts on the side, the total, prop angles. We'll have Kendall Valenzuela of Fantasy Life join the program in the second hour. She, in addition to being an expert on all things fantasy and prop perspective angles, also a diehard Seattle Seahawks fan, so you know she's locked and loaded with all of the ideas for tonight. Seattle, JVT, a consensus 3-point favorite. There are some 3.5 still at FanDuel, Hard Rock, some other books. Total sitting 44.5. And this is a fun one, right? New England's got revenge on the mind. Drake May coming off an MVP caliber season, and he's got a few new toys. You add A.J. Brown and Romeo Doubs. Seattle, meanwhile, the road to the repeat starts now, and he has to do it without the Super Bowl MVP at running back in Kenneth Walker and his offensive coordinator, Clint Kubiak, who's out here in Vegas with us now.
Yeah, so I think there's a bunch of different ways you could start this conversation. For me, and I think a lot of people, the first question you ask is the offensive line going to hold it better this time around?
Yep.
For New England, you go back to the Super Bowl, Drake May pressured on 43.4% of his dropbacks, or 23 of them in totality. He was sacked 6 times. While he was under pressure, he goes 6 of 13 for 75 yards, 5.8 yards per attempt, throws a touchdown, throws an interception, also commits 3 turnover-worthy plays. And you look at the starting offensive linemen in that game. Well, 3 of them are back. You got Will Campbell. You got Mike O. And when you, I believe I'll pronounce that correctly. I have to go back and look. Morgan Moses as well. But those three were out there. The latter two performed pretty well. But Will Campbell was kind of the GOAT of that game. Gave up a sack, 6 pressures, had a PFF passing pass blocking grade.
Yeah,
32.9. And that's kind of what you go to, right? Is Campbell healthy, or is it the tiny arms? And are the two new faces, Elijah Vera Tucker and Jared Wilson, who's filling in for an injured Ben Brown at center, are those going to be enough to flip this matchup on its head? Because that was one of the main reasons you lost that game back in February.
Center is Wilson's at least more natural position, so I don't think that'll be terrible. The Will Campbell questions are warranted. And you mentioned the addition of Elijah Vera Tucker. He's brought in to help get that unit on track. And all of the optimism, at least in my mind, this offseason about, okay, Will Campbell's like saying all the right things. He put on a little bit of weight. He's healthy now. You bring in Vera Tucker. There were a lot of positives. And then you go and see all of the reports about the joint practices they had against the Eagles, where it looked like that unit was just getting dog walked. So I really don't know what that's going to be.
Well, we haven't seen Elijah Vera Tucker. He was injured in 2025. It was a pectoral issue or whatever it was. So this is the first time we're seeing him since 2024. Now, what's interesting, if you look at the PFF numbers, 2024 was Vera Tucker's best season from a pass blocking standpoint in a Jets uniform. So maybe he could build on that. But the fact that he haven't played for that long is something that is obviously worth noting. And what if this is just a matchup that does not work well for Campbell, regardless of the injury or whatever it is? So I am going to be curious. Like, this is where this starts. But then you kind of flip this on its head. The Seahawks come into this thing pretty beat up. You have Ty Okada, who's not going to play. You have Nick Emmanuel, who is injured, and we'll see if he's going to be out there. Don't forget, they had a second-round pick. I think it was at a TCU, and Bud Clark is out for the year. So if Emmanuel doesn't play, all of a sudden you're looking at a secondary that looks like it might be susceptible to giving up some big plays, much like they did against the Buccaneers last year when they played them. Oh, and by the way, you've got 2 new toys for Drake May to play with, like you mentioned, and A.J. Brown and Romeo Doubs that could really help him along here in this matchup.
Just speaking of the secondary, that's with already losing Kobe Bryant and Reek Woolen, too. So, like, some of the key pieces and key cogs of what that secondary was aren't there, in addition to now the defensive issues. So their secondary depth is going to be tested right away. There are some prop angles that we're going to get into a little bit later on in the show, one of which, at least for me, is in that vein that we can discuss. From a total standpoint, does anything stand out to you, or have you made a decision on the side?
I mean, I think you can. To me, I told David Jensen this earlier today. By the time I sit down and watch the game tonight, you'll want something. So I think it'll be Seattle. But I do think that you can make the case for this to be a potentially higher scoring game between the two. I mean, obviously, we talked about the injuries on the side of the Seattle Seahawks and the fact that you have this new offense with the new weapons at Drake May's disposal that could add to some of the ability to score here. And on the other end, I don't know if you trust New England defensively entirely. Like, all of the conversations about the Patriots in terms of the schedule and who they played, we like to focus on the offense. The defense benefited in a very big way. It's one of the weakest offensive schedules you'll see. And it's a hardcore stat, but this is worth pointing out. In that Super Bowl, when you look at it, the Seattle Seahawks, especially on runs to the end, right, so outside of the tight ends, 11 carries, 68 yards, 6.2 yards per attempt, three runs of 10 or more yards. They gouged them on some of those outside runs, and it looks like New England hasn't really supplemented those edge positions a ton. So if they're having trouble setting the edge, maybe you get some explosive runs from Price and company. Maybe you can get some scoring from this team too. And keep in mind as well, because it's like you said, we have props, Sam Darnold actually didn't really play particularly well, left a lot of completions on the field against New England. We'll have more numbers on that later. They could have scored more, I think. So I think that you could make the argument this is a game that goes over the total tonight.
You make a good case for the over. One thing I will say is that week one unders have been a cash cow the last handful of years, just with the, I think, the general thought process of a lot of these offenses being rusty with quarterbacks not playing as much in the preseason. Last 4 years, 44 and 22 to the under, so hitting it around 66, 67%. The best week of the whole season to the under of any week over that four-year span has been in week one. So maybe not this game necessarily. But if you look at the card, unders could be in play.
I'm due.
You are. You're
due for an over.
We're going to talk through a lot of trends later on in the show, too, determine whether or not they are something to buy in on or not. One of which, though, especially as it regards to this game, teams that lost the Super Bowl the previous season, 6-20 against the spread week one since 2000. That Super Bowl hangover has been a thing. We're going to step aside. More NFL next. Baker Mayfield got paid. And who's not showing up to Australia?
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thanks for hanging out. Money Moves on SiriusXM Channel 189, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And how about this? NFL Weekly on the Sharps turns each week's NFL slate into a sports prediction tournament. Everybody starts out with same chips, picks from the same slate, and lands on one public leaderboard so you can see exactly where you stack up to the competition. Enter at jointhesharps.com, or you can scan the QR code on your screen. Use the code VSIN50, that's V-S-I-N-5-0, for a 50% deposit bonus up to $100. That's jointhesharps.com, promo code VSIN50. He's Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Speaking of the NFL, we're getting underway officially with week one of the season later on tonight. Patriots and Seahawks going head-to-head. A full slate of games, though, coming up this week. Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday, Monday. It's going to be a blast, and plenty of news coming out in the last 24 hours as well as it pertains to a handful of these games, one of which being a topic I didn't think that we were going to cover before we got to games. Baker Mayfield getting a contract done ultimately. He set the self-imposed deadline, said, once we get to training camp, I'm done talking about this thing. Yet something tells me he's going to be pretty pleased with how this worked out, JVT. Three-year, $165 million extension moves up to $55 million for the average annual value of the contract.
Yeah, I mean, that's in its totality, right? So really what he's making, who knows? But either way, he gets his money, so another instance of, what, 9 out of 10? Yeah, wake me up when he gets here. 10 out of 10. I mean, Gonzalez got figured out, too. So almost every single time.
Well, he said he wasn't going to negotiate anymore.
Sure.
So
they're all liars.
Sick, lying liar.
Yeah, they're all liars. And technically, I mean, if Baker Mayfield, he's not lying if he's not part of it. Yeah, right, if his agent continues to do it. So whatever. Look, you got Mayfield locked up. You got Vea locked up. You're the favorite to win this division, and it looks like a pretty bad division. So here we go. Let's see if you can get it done. Coming off a year in which, maybe to no fault of his own, there was a lot of injuries. You were on your bajillionth offensive coordinator. But statistically, his worst season in a Buccaneers uniform. So it's a really big bounce back year for him.
Did you have any thoughts on the compensation, just considering where it puts him in the upper echelon of quarterback contracts at this point? He's behind only Dak and Mahomes, and he's in the same bucket now as Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Stafford, Trevor Lawrence, Love. What do you think about that dollar figure attached to him?
I mean, the next guy to get paid is generally always going to be up there anyway, right? So, like, once these guys get their new deals, they'll move past him. So I don't think it's that big of a deal. I think this is kind of just – is it business 101? Ooh. Generally, the next guy to get paid gets paid, and then the next guy that needs to get paid will also set some sort of record or be thrust into an echelon that maybe on the surface it doesn't seem like he belongs, but because those guys have signed their deals in previous years, it just means that they're dragging behind, and then when they get their new deals, they'll surpass him.
Well, he's going to be going head-to-head with one of them for week one. Bucks in Cincinnati taking on the Bengals for the opener, getting 3.5 points on the road, total 50.5, and even with the move to the under, 2-point swing down, it's still the highest total on the board for week one. You brought up the point yesterday when we did totals Tuesday that, I mean, could this be too high still with the market still not fully adjusting to some of the improvements that Cincinnati's made on D?
Yeah, I think I would want this to get back up just because if you missed out on the best of the number in terms of the total, that seems like something you'd want. 51 being the key number. Like if you can get back to 51.5, I doubt that that's going to be the case. But the overall theory, like you mentioned here, is just, hey, look, the Cincinnati Bengals and their defense coordinator, Al Golden, but they've invested in this defense. They've got three new pieces. It's not just Dexter Lawrence on this defense overall that you would think is going to help them improve. And even if it creeps them back just toward average, being average is going to be a really big deal mm-hmm. for a market that I think initially opened up this total, pricing this team just like they were. And so if you get that in terms of the defensive improvement, then all of a sudden you're talking about these games for the Bengals that generally getting priced in those 50 ranges, especially against a competent mm-hmm. offensive opponent like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that maybe this thing could go into the total, actually. So if it gets back to that 51.5, again, I doubt that it'll be the case, but I think it might give me a bite under the 51.5.
My two peak curiosities for this game are, what is the Bengals defense going to look like, and will this offensive line really be as good as people are making it out to be? This is supposed to be by far and away the best offensive line that Joe Burrow has had in front of him, and we know the early season struggle Cincinnati has had under Zach Taylor, 3-11 straight up, 3-9 with Joe Burrow as QB1. No other quarterback has been sacked more the first 2 weeks of the season than Joe Burrow since he entered the league. So keep that in mind. Again, 3.5, 50.5, your total there. We did get a few updates from Australia as well, as the Rams have officially embarked on their travel out there across the Pacific Ocean. Aaron Donald was not, however, on the flight.
Uh-huh.
I know you were right. So we got this news about 10 minutes after we got off of the air yesterday. We were sitting there putting together the rundown for today, and you were dead on. You said looking unlikely, especially considering how little 11-on-11 he really did have at practice and coming out of retirement the way that he is.
Yeah, I think when we were talking about it after the show, the comp that I made was Penix, right? It's Michael Penix. He comes in and he barely gets cleared for 11-on-11. He's not active for the Falcons game against the Steelers. Why? It's not that I think that they don't trust him. It's just that you don't want to, like, hey, buddy, first action in 11-on-11 in 2 years. Here you go. Divisional game out in Melbourne. Go and get him. Like, even if it's only 10 snaps, you don't want to risk a guy who is coming back for your ultimate goal, which is to win the Super Bowl. And I will say it 1,000 times over, which is why when we've talked about comeback player of the year, defensive player of the year with Aaron Donald, they do not care about weeks 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. Mm-hmm. They care about week 19, wild card weekend, divisional round weekend, conference championship weekend, and the Super Bowl. Those are the weekends they want Aaron Donald to be healthy. I'm willing to bet that this is a really slow roll for Aaron Donald in terms of snaps. You know, maybe he plays next week, because we'll talk about 10 games, I think, same for them, right? In terms of week one matchup to week two. Maybe you'll feel comfortable on a pitch count by the time they get back on the field for game two. But I think this is going to be a slow roll. And even when he gets out there, it's going to be limited snaps. They're going to roll him out very, very slowly.
Yeah, it was funny. Kyle Shanahan was asked about, did you guys have any requests to the league to play on the Monday night game? And he's like, yep, we did. They did not give it to us. The Rams, however, do have that Monday night game against the Giants.
So you get 11 days then between games, right? Because your team plays 10 days this Sunday. Dolphins, if I remember correctly.
Is that who they play week 2?
I can't remember.
I feel like that sounds right, but I'm not sure. At home against Miami, back home.
Back-to-back losses. That's going to be tough.
Oh, what is wrong with you? Myles Garrett, obviously, he's been dealing with some swelling in his knee. Didn't practice yesterday, but no risk of him missing the game either. So we're sitting at 3, largely, for that one. It's come down from the 3.5. We'll see ultimately where it closes ahead of Thursday. A big update, though, on the defensive line for San Francisco. Shanahan also, as a part of that press conference when he was having that discussion, announced that Alfred Collins, defensive tackle, tore his patellar tendon. He is out for the season. Can't blame the substation for that one. And this comes after another defensive end just got put on IR with a broken foot that's going to require surgery. So bad goes to worse, at least from a defensive line standpoint for San Francisco. A lot of concerns. Nick Bosa, however, not one of them. He has been confirmed he is back, and George Kittle, barring any setbacks, should as well.
Okay. Yeah, what did I see from Kittle? He's like, I've taken a step back
towards playing
again or something like that. Yeah.
And I love you, George, but relax.
So it's four here. Are you going to bite?
I might.
You're the 49er fanatic.
I know. I was tempted at the 3.5. Anything over the key number of 3, I was interested in. And I was texting you guys this morning. We're 4 at circa.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So I didn't respond because I think you know what you think.
Yes, but you know how I am about week one in general. I am a very, very much so of the tread lightly moniker. When
this is the time you're supposed to take your chances, though. I mean, similar now, unlike college football, we talked about this during week zero and week one of college football, which is you really don't know any about these teams, especially in the transfer portal era, blah, blah, blah. But now, too, I know a lot of these rosters generally are kind of the same. You're not going to get the turnover like with the Dolphins. Dolphins roster is almost like totally brand new. But it's, you know, we know a lot about these teams, and these teams are familiar with each other. So, you know, if you think four is it out in Melbourne.
One thing that – so Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay, it – used to be that Shanahan had the better of this matchup year in and year out. And the last 2 years, that pendulum has really swung. And McVay and the Rams are 5-1 against the spread the last 6 meetings now. I wonder if they've just got something figured out. And I understand injuries have played a large part to what has happened with San Francisco the last couple of seasons. But it just seems like they've had an upper hand beyond that as well, schematically. And they've just figured something out. So I don't feel super strongly about it, but I do lean San Francisco. I don't think that they've been given enough credit for the talent that they actually do have that's coming back and available. What did you think about the Cardinals-Chargers game continuing to move?
Told you. That's all I got to say. Everybody believes. We're all Arizona believers. Circa's down to 8.5. Total's 47.5. That thing's creeped up about 2 points, but... Look, I haven't told you anything, but I will just say that, look, 10.5 in an NFL game is a lot, I think, first and foremost. I also just think, again, I'll say this many times, especially for audiences who are tuning in and out. I just don't think we should conflate what could be a tough season for Arizona due to one of the hardest schedules in the NFL with what we rate them or how we view them. They are still, I think, a team that has some really high-end skill position talent. If you have a Marvin Harrison Jr. breakout season, we know what McBride is. We know what Jeremiah Love, could be, and he looks like he's going to play, although he's second on the depth chart. I do think that this is a group, and Brisket, Jacoby Brissett, is a serviceable quarterback in the NFL. I think there are going to be a handful on offense. Now, how good are they defensively? That's a whole other thing. But I do think they're good enough to stick around some of these inflated numbers they might face early on in the season before they start to cover them. So we had this. I think this has been on the docket for, what, like a week and a half, 2 weeks now. Yeah. Cardinals plus 10.5, and we talked a lot about it. And I will tell you this now. We're not going to get 10 when it comes to the contest.
Can confirm, because those lines have come
today, right?
out.
Yeah.
And yeah, at the end of the show today, we'll do our first like brief look at these numbers, but 8.5 is where it is for the Circa Million contest. Yep. Not ideal.
Changes some things.
Less than ideal. We are getting the 4 though for San Francisco if you want to submit early. We got to set
aside. I do not want to use Melbourne.
We got to set aside here on Money Moves. When we come back, in or out, looking at some of the make-miss playoff odds for the contenders. Who's a contender? Who's a pretender? We'll tell you what we think early on in the season next.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Football season is here, and the sharp money is already moving. Here's how the sharp plays sees it first. They track every line before the public ever sees it through exclusive data feeds from 4 major sportsbooks and thousands of sharp bettors and professional syndicates, all filtered and sorted by their AI model. That's the machine. How about the receipts? Every single play is logged, every result made public as well. Records dating back to 2011 and live logs the last 5 years, all on a live performance terminal you can check anytime. No login, no paywall, no steam game chasing or steal trends either. Follow the Sharp Money at sharpplays.com today. That's sharpplays.com. He's Jonathan Montobo. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're live, as always, in downtown Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book at Circa Resort and Casino. Time to get into a little more college football here. We'll talk specific games a little bit later on in the show, but want to go big picture, look at some college football playoff make or miss odds. This is an exercise that we're going to try to do, JVT, every week moving forward, just to keep a handle on the market and any potential opportunities.
Correct. Yes. And we're going to do it at this time every time. So there's no need to freak out whatsoever. This will be part of your regularly scheduled programming. So I'm very much looking forward to some of the
specifically
thoughts.
Specifically at 11:30 Pacific.
Yep, exactly.
Each and every Wednesday.
That's what it was scheduled for today. And that's what it will be scheduled for every day moving forward, or every Thursday.
Sounds like JVT is trying to force my hand to give you some inside baseball. So I will. No. I teased that this was the segment we were doing.
You don't have to say that.
When, as I pulled up the rundown in the commercial break, I realized, nope, that's not what we were supposed to do. But guess what? I didn't want to lie to you guys, so this is what we're going to do. Although, before we jump into some of these odds, I did want to point out quickly, we have a little bit of an update in the Western Michigan time clock drama. Yes, it's Wednesday and we're still talking about this, but the NCAA National Coordinator of Officials, Ron Snodgrass, sent out a memo earlier this morning regarding a, quote, standard timing protocol that ensures consistency in the administration of all college football games, with a policy mandating that the clock that is embedded in the broadcast moving forward, that is the feed that will serve the official clock for replay reviews. I don't know why it hasn't been the entire time, neither here nor there, but that will officially be implemented. It is a memo moving forward.
I mean, I would argue it is both here and there, because obviously what happened over the weekend.
Well, and we talked about it, was it on Monday or Tuesday with Western Michigan? They had initially agreed with the Big Ten's like understanding of it and their the way that they described how it played out. They then did their own investigation of it and decided, actually, no, this is pretty jacked up. This was improper protocol, and sent it to the NCAA Oversight Committee to address it.
And the CFP.
And the CFP. We don't have any results or any real statements from the college football playoff since then. As of now, the result still stands for what it is. But Rich Clark, who's the current executive director of the college football playoff, did say that that's something they kind of have to have a discussion about now, of how they truly do weigh that result when all is said and done.
Mm-hmm. We also got news yesterday that it's officially official. It's going to happen. I mean, not official, but
it.
The expansion. I don't know if you saw that the CFP board, or whatever term you want to use, has invoked their negotiating window with your big boss. And they are renegotiating. So, in other words, asking to expand this college football.
But that's not that. Is that fully with expansion in mind, or is that just other networks trying to join the party? We already split with TNT, even though ESPN staffs it.
That's funny.
Okay, I don't like the idea of 24. I think we have already seen, we already have the evidence that even at 12, you have teams that don't belong there.
Money.
I know, but it's a bit.
But it's got to be a lot of money, because, as it's been pointed out, the SEC title game, I think, brings in like $150 million or something like that to the conference, and that's all theirs. Same thing with the Big Ten. So the reason why you open it up is then again, like your point, then you can get more people to the table. You can split up your rights just like you do with the National Football League, and you can get that money on top of maybe a little bit more by canceling out your conference championship game. So.
Well, to put a bow on the Michigan side of this thing, we got the new AP poll that came out yesterday. Bless you. Michigan went from 16 in the national rankings to out of it altogether. They are the highest ranked team ever to drop out of the rankings following a win. And from a make-miss CFP odds perspective, they're now plus 550 to be able to get into the field. When you look at this market, were there any names in particular that stood out to you one way or another?
I mean, a couple. And again, I think you got to talk about this from a price standpoint and realize that some of these, you're going to have to lay some prices. I mean, there's only 12 seats at the table. There's not going to be that many that I think you're looking at and going, like, all right, I'm going to take a big dog to make it.
I would just say, can we start there? So if you want to throw these odds up on your screen, looking at all of those teams that are specifically odds on numbers and relatively heftier prices, is there one of those teams that is a perceived contender at this point entering week two that you would be interested on the plus money price on the no?
I mean,
are you going to say Oregon? Don't do this to me.
One of them did struggle with a group of six.
Don't do this to me.
I mean, I think the obvious answer after one data point is Oregon, right? Plus 235. The two coordinators are gone. The conference is brutal. Schedule's relatively tough in terms of what they have in front of them. Is there a reality at the very least that you're going to take no on Oregon, right? And sit at that price. they lose, let's say, three games and are sitting there, and you really have to decide if this team's going to be able to get in there. You look at their schedule, opportunities for losses. They have to go on the road against USC. They have to go on the road against Ohio State. They've got to play host to Washington. And that doesn't even include, you know, whatever, like, I don't think they would lose this, but we just watched them scuffle against Boise, so I'll include a road game against Illinois. Or what if Calandria is freaking awesome? What if UCLA is everything people think they are, and they're going to go up there and give them a run for their money? Given what we just saw, I don't think it's a given that you can circle a bunch of these games as potential victories for the Ducks. So if they fall in the three most opportunistic spots on their schedule to build a resume, which would be USC, Ohio State, and Washington, I think there's a reality that that's, you know, something that could happen. And then they're on the outside and you're debating, is a three-loss Oregon versus whoever going to get in?
I think I agree. Based on what we've seen so far, that's the most obvious. You and I are both very pro-Texas and what they can be with Arch Manning this year. But from a schedule standpoint, it is an absolute gauntlet for the Longhorns. And it starts, of course, this week against Ohio State. But they also have LSU at the end of the season and Texas A&M, both of those games on the road. Ole Miss at home. The Tennessee early season game, we're still finding out some data points about what they're going to be, but Faison Brandon early returns look pretty darn good. Yeah. So they have some tough spots that they have to go to.
I'm kind of tempted to I know you can't, but I'm kind of tempted by your Yellow Jackets this week. You get a good one. I don't think that's
I'm excited for the game.
Spread.
It was funny. Brent Key was asked on the podium yesterday about some of Josh Heupel's comments at his Monday presser, saying, you know, he talked about what a physical opponent you're going to be. And he said, did he say that before or after he watched the game? Because if he said it after, that's just Josh being kind and laughed it off, because it was a brutal performance for them against Colorado.
It was. And to add to your point about Texas, I would just say this, because I think there's two things can be true at once. The first of which is, yes, I understand when people keep saying the Texas schedule is brutal. As I keep saying, and I pointed out in the guide,
I didn't even say Oklahoma is part of it as well.
Sure. But as I will continue to say, as you look at this, they leave the state of Texas one time up until November 7th. That is, and that's the road game against Tennessee. Texas State at home, Ohio State at home, UTSA at home, Oklahoma and Dallas, Florida at home, Ole Miss at home, Mississippi State at home. I mean, this is a ridiculously home-loaded schedule. So if there was going to be a time in which Texas could get a schedule like this on paper and navigate through it, it would be when you barely go on the road, except for three of the last four games of the season.
And we have seen in this iteration of the college football playoff, you can have two losses. Mm-hmm. And if they're against great teams, if you don't have a hiccup against somebody that you shouldn't, if you don't have a hiccup against a Florida or something like that, for example. However, there are just so many obstacles and roadblocks. That was at least another number that on the surface
and
seemed appealing.
They're going to win this weekend, so that's one big notch on their belt for
sure. You think so? You're laying the 1.5.
Yep. Talk about
are
best
bets. Beautiful. Okay, I'm here for it. Last couple minutes, though. Are there any teams that maybe we aren't talking about that we should be as a potential CFP?
Well, we're going to talk. I mean, it's if you go a little bit deeper, then you start to talk about this. I think the obvious one is, who do you think is going to win this Memphis-Boise game later today? We'll have more on that as part of the West Coast bias. But if you're really digging through some of the big numbers, it seems like this is, you know, we called the week zero Memphis UNLV game a faux CFP eliminator. Mm-hmm. This seems to be potentially a legitimate one, as Memphis looks pretty freaking good so far. They went out in a really tough spot, handed it to Arkansas State. We saw what Boise State just did in a loss. So maybe it's a brutal spot for Boise, but market really likes them this week. And so whatever you're thinking about this, and if you think the market's right, playing like a Boise to make a playoff, things like that, I think those are things that are worth looking at too.
Yeah, Boise's still plus 350. Yeah. But I'll say for Memphis, if they do overcome as an underdog and get this win on the blue, and you, two of your first 3 weeks of your season, beat UNLV and Boise on the road, it's essentially going to be yours to lose the rest of the way. And they're still double digits right now at 10-1 to make the playoff.
I mean, and I would argue, if you're legitimately thinking about playing Memphis to make the playoff, why not just bet a money line this week against Boise State?
Yeah, what is that?
Because that's not going to happen unless if you make the playoff, unless you win this game today against Boise, or this weekend against Boise.
Moneyline plus 280.
Yeah. I know it's not that much, but I think that's the safer way to play, because there's obviously a reality where you play them to make the college football playoff. They need this win, but then ultimately they lose a couple of games in conference, whatever it is, and they don't make it. Losing an American, I was going to say AAC, but they're not that anymore, right? Just an American.
They do have to go to Tulane in the middle of the season in October. An ECU team that, granted, I saw them against a really tough opponent in Alabama, but it did not look good. But other than that, at Navy at the end of the year, like, their schedule for an American Conference schedule isn't that daunting.
Got some interesting NFL news. Not anything big, but just some interesting NFL news.
Well, that's a tease because I have not seen it yet, so you're teasing even me. We got to step aside here on Money Moves. When we return, though, we will give you that update and talk through some interesting trends for week one of the National Football League. Some of these, are we buying or are we not? We'll discuss.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Here on Money Moves, Stormy Bonantoni and Jonathan Von Tobel with you. And we both know it is never fun to get into an accident, especially if you're in one and the other driver doesn't have insurance or not nearly enough. Suddenly, you're stuck with medical bills, car repairs, lost wages. The list goes on and on. That's where Lasso Injury Law steps in. Their experienced team knows all the ins and outs of uninsured and underinsured motorist claims. They will fight to make sure you're not left paying for somebody else's mistake. And if the worst ever does happen, no Lasso Injury Law is here for you. Call 702-625-8777 for your free consultation today. No voicemail or run around, just real people ready to help you out. Lasso Injury Law, they fight for you because your future matters. Head over to lassoinjurylaw.com, or again, here's that number, 702-625-8777. And you mentioned before the break, JVT, that we got a little bit of news in the National Football League. We sure did.
Yeah.
How about this out in Minnesota?
Well, fine. You present it.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. J.J. McCarthy is now your third-string quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. Carson Wentz, because it gives them the best chance to win. According to Kevin O'Connell, he will serve as a primary backup.
It will be a week-to-week evaluation moving forward.
No, it won't.
That's what it says.
Week-to-week, he'll say, yeah, Carson Wentz is better.
Is that not wild to think where we have come?
Yeah. I mean, look, we saw it last year. It was historically bad. Hopefully the kid rebuilds his confidence in a year here serving as a third-stringer, and that's going to be something that is potentially good for him. Him, you know, we have other guys that are young that haven't played in the NFL, but like a Fernando Mendoza type, which the strategy looks like is going to be just let them build on the bench and through practice. So we'll see if it actually comes to fruition that he's going to be pretty good. But either way, we knew the Vikings were taking a risk. Look, when a guy gets drafted and you're telling me that he went whatever and won in high school, we're stretching. Seriously, like, that was one of the big things. We didn't know that much, and he was in a very restrictive offensive system in college, and now you're seeing the, I think, fallout from that.
Well, so. And it was all about that he's a winner, right?
Right.
Like, that's what it, whether it's high school, college, he found a way to win games, not so far at the National Football League level. Meanwhile, let's look at their week one matchup, because they are a 1.5 point, are they dog?
Vikings should be favorites.
One and a half point favorite to the Packers right now. I wanted to bring this up because we're going to get into a handful of different trends here. Since 2014, underdogs in week one division games have been cashing like crazy. 41, 21, and 2 against the spread. So the Packers as a road dog in this spot, is that an intriguing proposition in your mind, knowing the success rate that it has had?
I mean, I guess, because again, with trends, like, I kind of like to see, like why, like, how does it get there, right? You know, if you're going to tell me the moon is in the seventh house or whatever, and that's why underdogs cover, then I'm out. Ooh, there's familiarity. It's a divisional matchup. Again, unlike college, roster transitions generally the same guys year to year, right? You're going to get some turnover, but not an immense enough amount that you're going to see vastly different guys that are playing. So there's some, there's two teams that have played each other two times here within the last year playing again right away in week one. I can kind of get it. I mean, you're only getting 1.5. I would buy it more from the standpoint of Packers, I think, would make a pretty strong teaser leg, don't you think?
Yeah.
Teasing them up to 7.5 and then adding whatever you would like if at a book where you still find the teaser price palatable for you. So I think, yes, I would buy it if we're talking about it from the teaser perspective. So I think they're a live dog in that standpoint.
The other examples of division dogs in week one, the 49ers, obviously, taking on the Rams in Australia, the Commanders against the Eagles, the Giants against the Cowboys on Sunday night. So two of them in primetime, because the Broncos getting 3 as well in Kansas City on Monday Night Football.
I know you kind of like the side, but how much for that trend, at least, do you draw a line through the 49ers considering they're playing in Melbourne?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different situation.
I would assume the vast majority, if not all of these situations that we're talking about in this trend, took place in
Correct.
True home environments.
And as you know, for the second game that I mentioned there, Washington, I have zero interest in backing them this week in Philly against the Eagles as well.
We might do the opposite.
Correct. That's a tease as well for later on when we get into millions. And I know we'll do a deep dive and make our official plays coming up tomorrow. Three teams for week one favored by at least 7 points. Most since 2021. You go back to 2006. Week one favorites of a full touchdown or more, JVT, just 20 and 351. 36% clip, including 2 and 5 ATS the last five. Here are your three big favorites.
Say that number again.
20 and 351.
20, like that's an ATS record or that's a straight up?
ATS.
Okay. So the favorite is 20.
Yeah.
Okay. That's just a really big, that's a very, very poor record.
Yeah.
Okay.
Lions, Jags, Chargers.
I mean, you know that I like the Saints.
I might have typed this in wrong.
That seems very extreme.
Is it 20 and 35?
That might be 20 and 35.
That seems more realistic. Yes. I think it's 20 and 35.
I mean, either way, yes. That's why I was like, you might want to say that one more time, because that seems insane.
I think I might have had a little
it seems so insane.
Slip when I was typing this
I also
out.
Haven't seen that posted anywhere. I feel like somebody would have put that one up. Okay, either way, 20 and 35.
Because I said 36%, and the math isn't math.
Yeah, that's not. That's definitely not. Okay, that makes more sense.
Still not good, okay?
Right. Well, and you know me, like I like one of those dogs. Actually, like two of them, right? Yep. I think we're talking about the Cardinals, and we like the Saints, and I like the Saints. And you know, we were debating whether or not, because the contest line is 8.5, to use the Cardinals, but I bet them about 2 weeks ago, a little bit less. I like the Saints catching 7 against the Lions, bet that as well. So I'm at least picking up what that trend is putting down here. Browns, I would defer to take an 8.5 just because I think that's a big number. And again, these are NFL teams, and I think generally they're more adequate week to week than we give them credit for. And you know me, like I'm kind of the lone person. It's like, maybe the Browns aren't going to be that bad. I know you. I mean, you like the Jags, but I don't think you're laying 8.5 of them.
No,
right?
I'm not. Correct. And that thing just keeps going up. It's almost like too much support at this point. It's just from a survivor play. I like them to win the game, obviously.
Teaser leg too, still playable. If those long teasers want to get to those two key numbers, you can still do that and get that down to 2.5. And that's also one of the early plays too, teasing up the Texans and teasing down the Jags. Minus 1.5 and plus 7.5.
Yeah, and that is a teaser leg that I already have in pocket as one of those. Speaking of the Browns, unders 13-6 in Deshaun Watson starts since he has been in Cleveland. Do you think that we could get another under game potentially in the opener?
For this one?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think we talked a little bit about that, right? I mean, this one had gotten bet up a bit. But I think that, especially for somebody like you that doesn't like this Browns team and you believe in Jacksonville on defense, then this is going to be a group where you're like, hey, low-scoring affair for Cleveland. They get held down. Jags maybe still win by margin because they win. I'm going to throw this out there, even though it's always dangerous because I'm never really good at math on the fly. 28-3.
Okay.
That still stays under the total, right? So, yeah, maybe you can get there.
This is one that has been publicized a lot, so I know it's correct.
Okay.
The Chiefs 0-8 against the spread their last 8 times as favorites. It's the longest streak in franchise history and the second longest active streak in the NFL. Only the Panthers have a longer one losing games as favorites against the spread, that is. How do you see it? Could Kansas City Monday night against the Broncos not cover once again?
I don't know. So I've been toying with this idea for a little bit.
You hate Denver so much.
I do. You see, unlike you, I will stand on business, as the kids say, and say that I don't like this Denver team. And then ultimately, when they win 14 games again, you can all mock me. I don't mind being wrong. I'm wrong a lot. But I've been toying with this idea a bit. Like, you know, there's a chance Kansas City's like kind of good, right?
Sure.
And maybe they come out here and I'm right about the Broncos and Bo Nix kind of stinks and the defense can't hold this offense down. And all of a sudden you're looking at the old version of the Kansas City Chiefs, which are ripping off like 12 wins and going to AFC championship games with regularity starting a 2026 season. So to me, I think it'd be Chiefs or nothing. I think they could snap that this week.
Mike McCarthy teams 55-36-1 against the spread at his career as a home favorite.
55-36-1 against the spread as a home favorite, Mike McCarthy. Okay.
Yes.
Well, he's generally had good teams, and this is arguably one of the worst teams he's had, so I'm going to say no.
Oh, no. You don't like the Steelers?
Yeah, that shocks you?
I mean, no, but I thought that maybe I could get you on board this week of all weeks.
I will give you that. I don't want to call it a bingo free square. We can use that if you would like.
I would like.
But that is all on your shoulders.
You will bear the
fruit if they win and cover. But you will also you will get all of my scorn.
The pieces that the Falcons are missing defensively, the quarterback play we have seen. Come on. Give me
what have we seen? We've seen like 13 dropbacks.
And two of them have been good. And that's,
you can't state that as a fact. I know last year, for those who don't remember, I goaded Stormy into watching film on like a Panthers Falcons game. Like you went back and watched every snap. And then she realized, like, actually, John might be kind of right here.
which is the best part. I spent way too much time watching that. It took me
You were trying
like 2 hours.
Hard to prove me wrong. And then after 2 hours, you're like, you're like, damn, he might have a point. I don't know if you could absolutely prove. So now I will goad you into now watching Tua preseason film. I don't think you could prove that only two were good dropbacks.
That was an exaggeration. That was a little hyperbole. However, I don't know if there were many more.
Yeah.
I don't know if there are many more. Let me hit you with one more before we hit the break. Overs. Last year, obviously, we know that was hitting like crazy for Dallas Cowboys games. 13-4 in the regular season, the highest over rate in the entire league. 7 straight games on the road as well have gone over the total. We know the defense should be better. Do you think we still get there?
This is another one where it's similar to Cincinnati, isn't it? If we believe that the Cowboys might turn things around on defense, and this is a divisional game, don't we kind of think under?
Yeah, like maybe the market's just not accounting enough.
Yeah.
Enough for it. I can see it.
Market's still thinking that this is a Cowboys team more similar to the team. I'm going to look up this stat for you really quickly. There's an incredible stat about the percentage of snaps that the Cowboys had last year on defense and where they're playing now. Not a lot of them are even on teams, which is incredible.
All right, we got to step aside here on Money Moves. When we return, it is opening night in the National Football League. We continue our deep dive on Patriots Seahawks from a prop perspective after this.